Yes, and this fellow named Smith, he had disagreed with me. We were on the train coming along, I can't remember exactly what part, but of course the train, all the carriages, them were all, I don't think there was any windows in them, not as far as glass, and they were all open, and he kept having to pull the door open and put his back so as the train was going along and go outside the train. And we was running short of paper. We were playing cards, four of us, on this journey. And so it was getting short of paper, and the sergeant had a novel there, and he tore some pages out of it and gave it to him. So he rushed to this doorway then and worked his back so, and then threw it up, and it flew through the window back on our table where we were playing cards. Not very close, but that's what happened. But I think he died in the end with it. And his brother, as I say, used to play football for Birmingham. But a lot of people had dysentery. Terrible complaint. Yeah.
What did you think of the rations which were dropped to you?
Well, they were... Well, I suppose they meant to do us good, but he was always hungry. Well, I was. They were that long. Which is about, I'm just guessing, it's about 8 inches long. I would say 4 inches wide and about an inch thick, and you had three a day. So when they dropped the food to you, look, you carried either 7 or 8 days ration, and then you don't eat no more, so you'd be short the next day. So, and I think I've got a feeling there was five, well, there was, that's right, five cigarettes in there as well. There was a little packet of coffee, enough to give you a cup of coffee, you know, a bowl of water, like I said, because the container was heavily greased. You just had to light it after you had everything and boil the water, and that would give you a cup of warm coffee. But that's the only food we had. And when we came out, the first meal I had was marvellous. It was some bread and cheese, which was wonderful, really, that was. After about five and a half months of pay rations.
If somebody had committed a misdemeanor in the jungle, how would he have been punished?
Well, this is a difficult one to answer, because the law was that if you were caught stealing rations, you know, that wasn't your own, if you took more than your share, you would be shot. That was in the mirror, where they were shot. We had one chap did something, and he was tied to a tree, but they were deciding whether to do that to him or not, and the officer was persuading him not to, and it was never done anything to him. I don't know what punishment they gave him, because the punishment out there would be far worse than if he was on jankers in England. I mean, no matter what you had in England, it wouldn't compare with what we were going through normally. So if you were caught, that was it, with the order. If we were caught stealing rations, we were shot. But I think it was in the mirror. They reckon some were shot, but not in our column. Not to my knowledge, nobody. But they had to be very, very strict with things like that. I mean, if you took somebody else's ration, somebody else went short, didn't they? And not very good. I think I would never do it. But the main thing everybody rushed for was the mail. That's the first one to be opened, was to get the mail. Because it was good for morale to get some mail. Although we used to write letters to send back, but of course they never went back. I wrote a few when I had a chance to, but they never got home or anything. And this chap, what I phoned this morning, it was funny, he said to me, if I don't make it, Reggie said, will you send most of my personal stuff, what was in India, home? And he said, I'll do the same for you. And we both got home, so it was all right. Comical, really. Yeah.
Could you be beaten as a punishment?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if anybody... Oh, to be honest, I don't know if anybody was harmed in theirs, but I did read in the papers there's quite a deal about it. Some were shot for doing things they shouldn't do. Or I was also told that they were set free in the jungle with 5 rounds of ammunition. But whether that's correct, I wouldn't like to say. It's only what I heard of it. But I don't know of anybody that did do that. But they were ever so strict. Well, what else could you do? I mean, what you're going through was much worse than they could give you. You know, in England, I mean, so they had to make some serious. But they did tell us we could be shot if we were stealing other people's rations. But I don't know if anybody was shot at all, but what happened in other columns, I don't know whether any were or not. But according to Mirror, there was some, but I didn't know of anybody actually that was shot. But it was pretty strict. Well, you get, but you get some, you even get some laughs when you look back. I mean, we'd be in a long column, and we used to march day and night nearly sometimes. You were real shot, you'd fall asleep walking along nearly. And then, especially with this weight, and then you get the message to rest for 10 minutes. You only just got 10 minutes. And then the message used to come back and get dressed. It was meant to put your kit on and get going again. And of course, when it got down to the bottom, you knew what is. They said get so-and-so instead of get dressed. Another thing I would say, when I landed in Burma with the with a Dakota, not in a gliders, a lot more in gliders, and I got rid of two mules, and the first chap that came up to me and shook hands for me, it was, I don't know if you've heard of him, he was a great film star, with Jackie Coogan.
No.
Oh, he never heard of him, he was a big film star in America, like. And another great film star was Betty Grable. Have you heard of her?
Yes.
Well, I can't tell you the exact words what he said. It's something to do with shake hands with a so-and-so, so-and-so Betty Grable. That's just what the Yankee said to me the first time. Yeah, that was Jackie Coogan. It was in one of the books I got as a bit, because he had took some of the gliders in it. So he done very well, really. But I think he's passed on now, but I believe Betty Gray was still a glider, I think. Yeah, so he must have thought a lot of her, I suppose. Yeah, that was funny, really. Yeah.
What did you think of the men of the Fifth Leicesters, whom you were
attached to? Oh, all of them very good, yeah. The only thing that Major Lockhart wouldn't do, if another lot was in trouble, he wouldn't bother to help them. But if the Black Watch was in trouble, he always wanted to help the Black Watch, because I suppose he was Scottish himself. But I'd be least gone on there. But the one I would like to know for Lloyd is with Major Ross, because he was kind to me, really. But when all the vacancies came out for to get a month's leave, there was one vacancy for 300 men, and the first one come out the door was a chap that I knew of that come from Wales, and his name came out first, and he never went to Burma, he stayed in India, which nobody was very pleased with. Thought, I said, surely you're not going, surely somebody can go that was lucky enough to get back out of Burma. Oh, he said, I'm going, I suppose I would have done the same. But anyhow, it went on till I'd been there 2 years and 3 months, dodging all over India and one thing and another. And there was 54 vacancies. And this Major Ross, that, you know, was in Burma with, because he never, one many of us was in Burma with him, because it was made up a lot more different units when he was at Puno, I think it was that. And there was 54 vacancies and 4 eligible to come home on leave. And he drew the first 3 out, and not my name. I thought, oh, I've had it, and then he called my name out. I always sometimes wonder if it was a fiddle, because he just had a hat and he threw him at himself, nobody else there. And so I came on leave, but I went to Karachi for about a month, where we were waiting and waiting to come on. And I wrote to my wife and said that I'd give up nearly, there's no sign of me getting on a plane to come and see you. And I said, I can't see me ever coming. And I sent this letter, and she got it in the morning. And later in the day, she got a telegram to say I arrived at Dover. So I just put the letter in the box. And they come round and said, Kit, you're off on plane. And away we went. And I just posted that letter. So that wasn't too bad. And then we had to go back again. And then we went by boat to Rangoon, but in a place called Prome Road and bungalows and places like that. But the Japanese had left, there was a few shots fought all around, but nothing serious, and away they went. Then we had a long journey back home later on, and on the course.
What did you think was achieved by the Chindits in the jungle?
Well, their main job was really to stop all the supplies getting up to the main army, because they were fighting the 14th Army, and there's only one road and railway, and the Japanese had this supply route going right up through, Well, when that was cut off on two or three places, there was two or three places where Chindits sat on and stopped them. They couldn't get their supplies up, and you can't get up through jungles, you can't take tanks through jungles and things like that. You've got to have some sort of road or railway to get through, So the Chindits stopped a lot of that going up through. That was the main object, really.
Do you think they did that?
Oh, definitely, because, we were on for nearly 6 weeks, and then, I can't think of the Mike Calvert, I think, and they had a point to do. They was on for ages. They lost a lot of men, when they run out of ammunition, according to what I was told, they lost a lot of casualties getting away from it. Yeah, that was the main object, is to stop them getting up through them. Well, he didn't know where he was at head of foot or something, because that was all clear, but when you get people all over the place in the jungle stopping you getting up through your supplies, it comes pretty awkward for them. That's what the trouble was, to stop them getting supplies up. Yeah.
You mentioned that business of the Japan of seeing these hands in the jungle.
Yes.
Was this just a severed hand?
I don't know. We never touched them with an envoy. I saw about five, I should think. Were about from there, the stuff out of the ground.
From the wrist?
And nothing else. That's all there was. I don't even know if it was severed off, whether somebody was buried left with a hand. I don't know that, but I saw about four or five on the stuff like that. So I presume it was a Japanese fellow. I can't believe that English soldiers or anybody would do it. That's one thing with British soldiers, they don't go around killing women and children. But the Japanese, they'd kill anybody or do anything. That's the only thing I don't like about them. Look on the Burma Road, what they've done to the people there. That must have been terrible. Now, I'm afraid I should never know the Japanese. So.
Were these the hands of white men? Or?
Well, they look white, yeah. They didn't look as though they'd been there very long. But, of course, we don't know that, really. We never stopped. We just journeyed on. We had a lot of easy things, though. We went out on a recce one day. I thought, sorry for myself. And it was all a bit edgy, and with Bren guns going round, and around this little track came a Burmese, presumably was Burmese, with just a basket of corn cobs on his head, holding him up with his two hands. And of course, the chap in front, in the first one in the column, this figure come round the corner, instantly he let fire, pumped about 28 bullets into his ball broke, and all he had was a basket of corn cobs on his head. Which was what you call real bad luck. When the chap was out to kill anybody, was it this figure came in the corner, and of course, he let fire straight away. It was just an innocent person. You get a lot of things happen like that, but just can't be helped, can you? I had bring the bullet two along once, and I lost the column. Again, because the old bullet wouldn't move very well. And I came to a big paddy field, and I was lost. I didn't know which way to go. And they gave us so many rupees to give to people to help if you need any help sometimes. But I was going across, and this Burmese came across, and he put his hand up. Well, I got my rifle ready, because I thought, I didn't know where he's going to drill me or what. But he seemed friendly, came closer and closer, and then he spoke a bit of English, and he said, don't go that way, too swampy, and he pointed to a little tiny gap in the jungle, through there, he said, and that was the right way. So I didn't know it was right or wrong, but I took it, and I gave him a couple of rupees, and eventually caught him up. Yeah.
Did he seem pleased about the money?
Yeah, yes. Of course, the trouble in there, you didn't know whether they were enemies or friends. He never had no inclination who they were. But after, when I say I walked back about 10 or 12 miles to get them out on my own, well, you don't know a friend or enemy when they're on anything like that. You might meet some Burmese people, and they might be caught all right, and they might be the other way around. But oh, you have to get them back and got them out back. Yeah, but I think there was a lot of friends, and they weren't all the enemies by a long way, because a lot of the villagers helped other columns and all. They say it got lost in the jungle, which meant there was something lost, and there was, I read in the paper, where a lot of these people that got lost in the jungle in Colum finished up and lived in villages for a long, long time. So, that's pretty good, really.
Are you proud of having been a Chinda?
Oh, yes, I am, yes. Yes, very now, yes. Well, I went on holiday, it tickled me once. He was sitting, my wife was there, and we were at Old Combry. And we were in there, sat down, not met about 10 years ago. And there was a chap in there, an elderly man, I think he was an officer. And he was been in Burma for years. And he got talking to me, he said, "Where were you?" And then the man said, "I said, I'm in Burma, in the Chindis." And he got up and bowed to me. I said, "What are you doing that for?" He said, "Well," he said, "you always bow to a Chindit." And then he started talking in Burmese. He said, "You know Burmese?" I said, "No, I don't know a word." And that was it. Oh, he was quite nice, man. Very nice.